are you?
There we are. We are live. It's always that, like, that transition where you're just like, hey, so are we live? Are we not live? Anywho.
Yeah.
Welcome back. Welcome back to yet another episode of Breakpoint. Now, here's the, okay, so first of all, so we always talk about, we always do our thing.
Yep.
First of all, last month's discussion on DevOps was cool.
Yeah, I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
Simply because of the fact that we actually got into, and some of the feedback that we were getting from the comments on the video and stuff was that it was really cool and that it was a discussion about stuff that wasn't, like, it was technical, but we weren't, like, in there with tools and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. So that was good. Now, from what I understand today, though,
yes,
we're going to go into some tooling and kind of take some of those concepts and make them for real.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about some of the capabilities that Microsoft has around deployment. And if you know anything about Visual Studio, you probably heard about release management, and you may have even used it. But what we're going to talk about specifically today is not release management as a general discussion, but more in line with how do you use it with Azure,
right,
or cloud environments, specifically Azure in this case. And even beyond that, taking it to the next level in the fact of we're not going to talk about infrastructure as a service, so not just deploying to a virtual machine, although virtual machines might be involved with some of the demo that we're doing. In fact, it will be. But actually deploying to a PaaS environment, a platform as a service environment.
Nice.
Yeah, so there's a lot of questions that I tend to get around, you know, well, how do you do that? Because it's fairly straightforward, and I use that in quotes, you know, obviously, because nothing's straightforward.
Nothing ever straightforward.
Well, deployment, right? I mean, it's not easy, but certainly release management makes it a whole lot easier.
Right.
That is a fairly straightforward conversation, right? You know, you can encapsulate it in your head and you can say, okay, yeah, I get it. You're taking this package and you're going to push it to this machine.
Right.
But it's a little bit different when you're talking about platform as a service, right? So you have this package and you're going to push it to a service.
To a fabric.
Ooh. Yeah, exactly.
Well, because, I mean, ultimately it is a service, but you're deploying it to somewhere where you're not deploying it to a machine
that you know of. Right. So that introduces some arcanery, if you will, right? You know, if you want to call it sorcery. But it's really not. And that's what we're going to talk about here today. We're going to discuss how that sort of works.
Cool. So then before we get into that, just a couple of things for you guys. The first is, I think today you mentioned Azure, cloud, and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. There is an episode that we did of Breakpoint for release management for on-premises stuff. So if that's actually of interest for you as well, make sure that you look back. I think I'm pretty sure it's actually episode 1 or 2 of Breakpoint. So that's on there. So that's number one. Number two, remember, this is an interactive show. So if you do have questions, feel free to post them in the chat, or if you're watching this on demand afterwards, by all means, post the question right on the Channel 9 page, and we'll get you those answers. So that's that. Now, number two, if you missed the conversation from last month, Anthony Bartolo was here. We were talking about DevOps. We were talking about all of the conceptual theories about that. Make sure you watch that because probably some of that conversation will be relevant here. And then last but not least, there was another episode in the past, I'm trying to remember which one it was, where we were talking about the importance of how to do deployments, and we got into talking about, remember we got talking into back in the day of deployment documents.
Run books.
And Paul made a very good point in that some things should be automated and some things should stay manual. So keep in mind when you're watching Paul do his thing or he's talking about whatever, it's all within relative context of what you have in your environment, right? So obviously the tooling is there, the functionality is there, but there may be some parts of it that fit your environment and some parts that don't. So I think it's safe to say that what we're gonna see, and by the way, I haven't seen this yet, so that's what I'm saying. What we're going to see is a version of how this can be done.
Yes.
But release management, for all intents and purposes, I mean, is pretty much customizable.
It is.
Right? So what you're saying is not necessarily prescriptive. It's just giving you an idea of how to go about it.
In fact, you know, like the conversation came up with a lot of customers that I talked to around, you know, like, how do you do this? And the fact of the matter was, like, I haven't really actually done this before, right? So I went, did some research, and one of my colleagues down in the States by the name of Donovan Brown, wrote up a really great article on his blog around how to do this. So, in fact, the demo that I have that we'll show you is basically that that blog post in in action. And we'll provide you with the link to that blog post, because if you're interested in recreating what I've done here, that's how you would generally do it.
Perfect. So we'll make sure that we get that link to you.
Yeah.
Cool. So let's dive in.
All right. Before we actually show you any code or demo or anything else like that, I just want to talk about some concepts for those of you that may not know release management very well. So the first thing that we want to talk about here is the fact that you have a solution and you have it in version control. And we have here, for example, Visual Studio Online. And the reason why I'm using Visual Studio Online instead of TFS in this example is because that's what I'm using for this demo as well. But you could easily use TFS if you wanted to as well for your version control repository. But the bottom line is you have an Azure website, for example, that you created, like I did in my example. You check that into Visual Studio Online, you do all sorts of work on it, and then when you're ready to deploy it to whatever environments, well, then you basically can, at that point, you know, deploy it automatically depending on however it is that you want to do it. And that's sort of what this slide sort of shows. The intent here is that, you know, you have, you know, various different environments that you're actually going to. So one, for example, could be your dev environment, which is one that you use quite a bit, for example, right? So you do a lot of deployments to dev because, you know, things break and you have to go back and things like that. Well, naturally, right? And then you have a number of different QA environments. And here, for example, you have an integration environment, a QA environment, maybe you have a UAT environment, whatever, right? So you have all these different sort of environments and you need to actually deploy to those in a very similar fashion, right? So it may be slightly different because maybe as you go further closer to prod, you have more servers because, you know, the closer the environment is to prod, the closer you want it to be to the real thing, right? Or at least that's the theory. So the intent there is that, you know, like there are some subtle differences in how you deploy your solution to different environments as well, but it should look fairly similar. So the bottom line here is that there should be a repeatable process that you can automate what makes sense to automate, but at the same time have the flexibility to keep things manual wherever you mentioned it, for example, as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the things too that I was always challenged with back in the day.
It's your favorite saying.
It is, because a lot of things that we cover here on Breakpoint, I always think back to how it used to be in the enterprise environments, right? So here you're kind of showing a more simplified diagram where effectively there's one of each of these things, but even if you have a QA environment, you were mentioning UAT, there could be several of these environments where you're testing individual components.
Absolutely.
And especially, the more complicated that your architecture gets, the more complicated these environments get, because potentially each one of your components has its own environment.
Agreed.
Which then you need an environment of all of those environments, and then things get that much more complex.
Yep.
So all the more to your point of saying, hey, this is why you need that, is repeatability a word? If not, I just made it up.
No,
but
sure.
You need that repeatability because as your architecture gets more and more complex.
Repetition would probably be.
Sure. You need the repetition, you need the, whatever, you get my point. As your architecture gets more complex, you need to take into account all of these factors.
Absolutely.
Now, not to say that humans are not good at this, but software is that much better at keeping track of all of these different
especially
eccentricities.
And I think if you talk to anybody that actually does deployment of software, so your IT infrastructure folks, maybe your, you know, some of your dev leads or whatever it is that are involved with this process as well, they'd probably agree, right? So these people, you know, any sort of release, there's like at least a 20-page document, probably larger, right, of all these configurations that need to be set up. And invariably, somebody's forgotten to document something or somebody forgets to do a step for whatever reason, because you're usually doing this at 2 in the morning, which is the other thing too, right? So we all need sleep, right?
Yep.
So things get missed and therefore things break.
Right.
So the intent here is not to replace the person. The person is still absolutely important to make sure things work properly, but the automation assists in the deployment so that, you know, the things that are, you know, sort of silly tasks like setting up a configuration variable or, you know, making sure certain files in a certain folder, you know, all that stuff is taken care of. So, yeah, and here's just an example of the automation. We sort of talked about that repeatability or repetition, if you will. So, and this is also the other component, right? So the intent here is that, you know, you automate whatever makes sense for you to automate in that process, But at the same time, you have full control over the environments that you're deploying to, right? So you can stop a deployment based on certain things, right? Either manually, or maybe you have a trigger set up that, say, for example, if something fails, mm-hmm. you know, you roll back. Mm-hmm. So again, if anybody's run through a process of doing a deployment that's failed, rolling it back could be an easy task, but right. more cases than not, it's
harder
nightmare.
Than the actual deployment.
Oh my goodness, yeah. So getting that right is important, right?
Especially when there's databases involved.
Well, let's not even talk about that. But again, the whole idea here is, you're right. Oh my God, I got stories about that. So, but anyways, we
Paul
digress.
As Paul turns around to grab yeah. something to drink.
Yeah, I'm gonna go in the corner over there and maybe just, you know, cry. And,
it's
know.
All good, but we've solved these problems now.
Well, I wouldn't, no, we have not solved these problems. We've created tools that help,
Fair.
You know, the
Valid.
Process, right?
Valid.
So, there's no silver bullet, right? But at the same, and I don't care who you're talking to, if you're talking to our competitors, if they say we have the solution, nobody has a foolproof solution. I don't think anybody here is sort of going to agree with the fact that somebody has a foolproof solution, yeah. right?
Or so. You can even go so far as to say that, at least for me, speaking on my behalf, I would not want a full solution.
Yeah.
Because there's an element of control that ultimately you will lose. Mm-hmm. So the tools that exist do their job well. I don't know, that, like for example, in Minecraft, I wouldn't want the silver bullet.
Yeah.
I just want something that works that I can customize.
Yeah, exactly.
80% right. of the way.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny. There's an article that I saw that was pretty funny from one of the comedy sites talking about technology and, you know, automating everything. So it's like, you know, the article was basically, you know, this company, and it'll remain nameless just because it was not a real article anyways, but, you know, this company awards this team an award for creating a robot that will, you know, will try to destroy the robot from the previous competition because it's actually, you know, taking over the world and stuff like that. So technology, you know, you have to have some sort of checks and balances around it, and that is true, and that's an extreme example and a comedic example, but certainly it's true of, you know, deployment of releases as well. And when things go wrong, you need to have the ability to stop things if you want, or at least have a situation where you can sort of, you know, get the sanity back and then,
right.
and then look forward towards that. Yeah.
Right.
All right. So the other component here is, and this is an area that I think we're very, very strong at, is the traceability standpoint, right? So Visual Studio Online, TFS, if you've used it, you're probably very, very familiar with, you know, how the fact that traceability is a big component of this. And you will notice that, you know, like from requirements through to deployment, there is that traceability. So if you think about a requirement, whether it's a product backlog item or user story or whatever it is that you decide to call it, it is connected to code that you're actually implementing. So there is a traceability component there. The tests that you do on the code are basically, you know, testing different requirements. So there's traceability there to the code as well as to the requirements. You know, deployments are basically a set of builds, or it's a build that you're actually deploying. And that build is associated with a number of different code changes, which then you can actually look backwards, right? So the intent here is that a deployment, which is the step after a build, if you will,
right.
has that traceability backwards and forwards as well. So
yep.
the intent there is that, you know, you always know what happened. Right? And if you've done your proper job in making sure that the components of your deployment do proper logging and things like that, well then, you know what? If something does go wrong, hopefully it's a whole lot easier for you to figure out what went wrong and fix it. So that's something that's very, very important as well.
It just makes me smile because, again, going back to those horror stories of failed deployments, and then
yep.
you're looking at logs and you're like, I have no idea why this isn't working.
Exactly. Exactly. Right? So.
And then you fix one thing, you deploy it again, you thought you fixed it, but then you broke something else, and then one thing leads
yeah.
to another. By the time you're all done with it, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and everything now is broken.
Exactly.
Not just the one thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
Not that that's ever happened, and I've never been through that, but.
We all have, and we all want to go in the corner and actually go in the fetal position.
It's almost
yes.
like a rite of passage, I think. Like, you have to have a failed deployment at some point to call yourself a legit developer slash. You know,
I think there's merit to that. Yeah, you know, like, I mean, abysmal failure is kind of an important component of success down the road. So, and we all have a story.
The things that we talk about here at Breakpoint. So sometimes you come to Breakpoint to talk about tools and all that kind of stuff, Visual Studio concepts, whatever. Sometimes you just come for therapy, and that's
yeah,
okay.
It's cathartic.
Sure.
Yes. Absolutely.
Either way, Paul and I are here to help, and we're here to listen.
Yes. Hello, Seattle. I'm here to listen. Fraser Green. All right. So how it works, and we have a folder that showed up in there. That's kind of funny. Okay. So anyways, let's talk a bit about the process of how this sort of works, right? So you have code that you basically checked in, and maybe that code, when you check it in, you have a continuous integration build. Maybe you don't. But a build is kicked off at some point. And when that build is successfully done, it actually puts the bits, for example, into what's called a drop location, which is just a folder, right? So you have a zip file probably that has all the bits that are created in binary format that is ready for a deployment, whatever that deployment might look like. So the way it works right now is that you need the release management client. And by the way, what I'm talking about, the context of this, is doing a PaaS deployment to Azure. This is not a on-premises deployment. So it's a little bit different than release management that you would see today. So basically what happens is release management client does work with Visual Studio Online. So you don't need the release management server in this case. So the release management server is a component that would work on premises, for example, but what we've done within Visual Studio Online, and you may not know this, is that the RM components, release management server components, are actually built into Visual Studio Online already.
Huh.
Yeah.
No, I did not know that.
So that is there, and we're improving on it, and there's going to be a whole lot more news down the road with some major improvements down the road as well, but we'll leave that for now because, to be honest, I have not seen all of them in myself, but what I've seen has been pretty impressive. So,
well, and of course, that's just going to be a topic for another Breakpoint episode.
Well, that's kind of what I was thinking too, right? You know, you got to keep the channel fit.
Of course.
But anyways, okay, so what happens here is you do need the release management client. So this dark, you know, WPF application that you that we'll show you a little bit later, that if you've done any work with release management, you probably already know. So the release management client basically will define your workflow, define the servers within Azure, or the services within Azure that you need. And you're also gonna need some capabilities around PowerShell, right? And as if you do anything with Windows from a deployment standpoint these days, you're probably familiar at least with a passing knowledge of what PowerShell is, so.
And if not, I mean, there's a ton of great resources online. There's actually an entire course on PowerShell on
Virtual Academy.
I'll make sure to post that link
as
well.
Yeah, definitely that'd be worthwhile because I haven't watched that one yet and I have to.
It's actually pretty good. I mean, I've avoided PowerShell for the longest time and I actually understood what they were going at. So if I could do it, you could do it.
There you go. So anyways, the release management client, basically the reason why you need it is to A, define your workflow, right? So what is your application going to look like from a deployment standpoint into each of the environments that you want? It's also going to define the environments themselves, right? So your dev, your QA, your production, or anything in between. And it's also going to be the area where you do your approvals. So there is no, internal or portal-based approval and rejection tool within Visual Studio Online today. So if you have TFS, today, the release management server, when you install it, actually does have that. So that's one area where the on-premises is a little bit ahead of the Visual Studio Online component.
Yeah, that one we actually went through with Adam in the first episode.
Exactly, right? But you know what? If you have the release management client, you don't need that portal either.
Cool.
Although maybe you prefer that portal client, but this is the way things work today. So once you have that and you've defined all those workflows, basically then you do your deployment, right? So you do a deployment to dev, and the way that'll work is you will basically create the drop location, you will copy that to a virtual machine of sorts. And it doesn't have to be a virtual machine in the cloud, it can be a virtual machine or a physical machine on premises, for example. But you need somewhere to put that zip file on there. And then at that point, what release management will do is we'll kick off a PowerShell script, in the case of the demo that I'm going to show, for example, that basically deploys that website out to Azure, right? So the way I've done it is I got a dev, a QA, and a prod environment. So I got three environments. And basically what happens is I can use a single virtual machine to do the drop, but I've actually created three just to make sure that it's, you know, everybody can see exactly that there's a difference between them. Yeah. But basically, it does the same thing in each one, right? So it's a little bit of overkill, but the intent is around, you know, showing what is possible in the workflow. Down the road, the intent is, as far as I understand it, is that you're not going to need that virtual machine. So it'll basically be, you know,
straight
Visual Studio Online, for example. You just go straight to the Azure PaaS website that you're trying to deploy.
Which technically is how it works with Git today.
Yeah, but except the limitation with the Git sort of workflow is the fact that it's not nuanced.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough.
So you can do continuous deployment within Git and Visual Studio Online 2 of Azure website.
Yep.
But if you have other things, like if you have a database that you
need
to
for
deploy
sure.
and stuff like that, that's where it gets a little bit more difficult.
I mean, there is a purpose for that. I'm not necessarily suggesting that it's an enterprise purpose, but I was just...
it's a good point, right?
You don't need the virtual machine.
No, it's a good point because some of the people online might be thinking, well, I can do this already, right? So this seems like overkill. But the intent here is that, yes, you could do that, but I want to show you how you can create complicated workflows.
Yeah.
And it's not only a case of maybe your workflow includes an Azure website, but maybe you have a database on premises.
Sure. Sure.
So you have to have that sort of demarcation of responsibilities.
And I want to throw one more thing in there.
Yes.
So you had mentioned that you have different virtual machines for every environment.
Yes.
Okay. So I'm just going to put it out there because I have seen it done. In the case of when you're testing stuff out in Azure, you're testing stuff in the cloud, there really is no reason not to have separate environments for each one of these. I've seen a couple of people, and I've seen a couple of times where you have the one server with, let's say, three different instances, so dev, QA, and production of, let's say, this site's an IIS.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, come on. In the world of cloud these days, and especially for those of you guys that have MSDN credits as part of, or Azure credits as part of your MSDN, I mean, this stuff is dirt cheap.
Yep.
Right. So if you're going to test the real thing and you're going to go through all this process of actually bothering to do different test environments and whatever, have the different test environments.
Yeah.
Right. So, it kind of triggered that thought because you said, hey, I have a virtual machine for dev. I have a virtual machine for Q&A. I have a virtual machine for prod. You're only going to keep these up for as long as you're doing the deployment or the testing or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So keep them separate so that, like you said at the top of the show, you want things as close to production as possible.
Yeah.
In theory, in production, you don't have all of your stuff all together.
Exactly.
So just keep that. It's just something to keep in mind because I know a lot of people, the first thing that they think of is, well, for dev and QA, I want to save as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go onto the one machine. Whereas my take on it is, hey, agreed, you want to save as much as possible. So that means in the cloud world, you spin up multiple virtual machines, you use them for as long as you need them for testing, and you shut them down.
Yep.
That's effectively the same thing as saving with the one machine that's always on.
It's actually a good point. And depending on the economics of your architecture, I mean, it may be even cheaper to do it that way.
True.
So you get the benefits of everything,
right?
But at the same time, you pay less. So imagine that. More for less.
And by the way, there's a lot of different articles and stuff like that, blog posts, or even on Azure.com on how, like, all the different pricing scenarios and whatever, that it may look a little bit scary, but it's really easy once you get into it. So just don't, I always worry when we make decisions based on cost or what we perceive to be as costly before we actually try it and then realize, oh, that whole thing just cost me $5.
Yeah, exactly, anyway. Right. Sometimes the best solution isn't always the cheapest.
Right.
But at the same time, if you can get a cost-effective solution that does everything that you need, that's usually the right answer.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't mean to get into a whole Azure pricing discussion.
Yes.
But especially when it gets into these, spinning up multiple environments or whatever, people get really kind of...
Yeah, fair enough, right? So I'm going to go through quickly this, right? So obviously, once you've done your dev deployment, then you're going to want to actually do your deployment to whatever QA environment. So QA number one to QA number N, for example. It could be UAT, it could be integration, it could be whatever, SAT, whatever you call your environments, for example, from a testing standpoint. And then finally, you can actually do it to production. So the intent being that, as you can see here, we're not creating different bits for every single environment. We're actually using the same bits and we're just deploying it based on the configurations of those different environments. So a repeatable process that you can use for going forward and things.
Yep. And I also like the fact that it's still always coming back to the one drop location versus, again, some scenarios that I've done. It's like, hey, deploy. Sorry, did I say scenarios that I've done? What I meant was scenarios that I've seen where you're deploying it to dev, and then you take the code from dev, because you know it works there.
Oh, yeah.
And you copy it to the next one, and then you're like, oh, well, it works there. So you copy from there to the next one, and it's no
go. So I've seen that as well, and there's a real big problem with that. And the problem is data.
Right.
Well, I mean, certainly it's the code itself, because the code and configuration, but also think about data, right? So if you're doing that, I've seen people cut or customers cut corners where they say, well, we're just going to use, you know, we're going to use production data
right.
for this. And maybe that's okay. But
no.
Sometimes it is okay to use production data because you want to mimic it, right? Unless there's a security reason for it.
Okay, thank you. That's what I was getting at.
So if you're using, like, for example, you know, social insurance numbers or yep. health information,
yep.
like, oh, no. You don't even obfuscate that stuff. You
right.
create dummy data
yep.
in your dev and QA environments. Maybe your final environment before production, you might use semi to real data,
yeah.
But that's locked down just like it would be in yeah. prod.
So that's a whole different topic for like that could be an episode in and of itself.
There you go. We'll put it on the docket maybe.
All right.
There you go. So enough slides. Let's actually show some of this stuff. What I want to do is I actually want to show you the blog post very quickly. So the way I found this, and the reason why you can do this yourself if you have release management capability and thing in Azure credits from MSDN, it's actually quite easy to do. So if you go to Donovan Brown, okay, so I'll just zoom in here a little bit so you can see that. So it's Donovan and then the color brown.com. And so you click on that. And he's got a number of different sort of posts and stuff like that. So he's actually one of the, well, it says right there now, a DevOps Senior Program Manager at Microsoft. So that's all well and good. But the way I find this most often is I go down to the tag cloud that he has, and there's a PaaS tag here somewhere, if I can remember how things work. Yeah, there you go, PaaS. And there should be two, unless he makes a new set of articles, but there's two different articles that he has on PaaS deployment. And the one that I specifically am talking about is the second one. How do you use Visual Studio Online and Release Management Online to deploy an Azure website? And basically it goes step by step, you know, create the virtual machines that you're gonna need, create the ASP.NET MVC project or whatever type of project you want. And then also, you know, all the various different sort of build things that you need as well. And then also, you know, how you actually create your, you know, release management process. So definitely look at that. We'll provide the link in the video on Channel 9 when it's ready.
Cool.
But I did want to mention that because it's actually a very, very good article for you to take a look at. So with that being said, what I have here is I have, for example, this application that I call PGL PaaS Web Deploy. And as you can see, I've done a whole bunch of things. And because I've been testing things out, you know, you see there's some failures. I've done, you know, a whole bunch of different sort of deployments. And also you have the app actually in that specific environment as well. So you can see all the various different stages. And for simplicity, I've only got three stages here, a dev, a QA, and a prod. So let's actually take a look at this. What I want to do first is let's actually go here. Now, I apologize. I can't make this any bigger because there's no sort of capability of scaling the size. So I'm going to make this a little bit larger.
Which, to be honest, works much better anyway because
yeah.
you can see this a lot better.
So I got these stages or environments, if you will. And basically, you can see here we have some workflow. So this is no different than what you have already today, which is basically you have a dev environment, a QA environment, a prod environment that I've defined. You can have as many as you want. And then you have basically different sort of steps. You have an acceptance step, a deployment step, a validation step, and an approval step in each of these things. And as you can see, I've got my own sort of, I'm basically the owner of this because it's a single person deployment example. But as you can see right here, I've automated a few of these things. So basically these are pass-through things. So I don't want to have to approve the acceptance of this build going into dev, for example. And maybe in the validation side, I say, okay, well, I'm going to trust that it's going to be okay when you deploy it. And then if it's not, then we'll just redeploy later. And then finally, there's an approval step. And I basically put no approval step in here just to make things a little bit more quick for me to deploy to QA. So basically what happens is once it's successfully deployed to dev, it'll automatically start going to QA. And here you can see, for example, I've also automated these things as well. And I do have an approver in this case. So basically before I go to production, I have to actually approve the fact that this QA build is appropriate. So maybe I'm talking to my QA team, so my testers and things like that. And they say, yes, everything's good to go to prod, so let's go to prod. So I click on approve, and then at that point, it goes to production and goes through it. And the difference between prod and QA in this case, and again, this is all because this is the way I decided to do it, is that none of these steps are automated. So as you can see, there's no checkbox there. And the reason for that is typically with production, you want to treat it with kid gloves, right? So the intent being you get every single step and you take a look at things and then you sort of do your sniff testing and make sure everything's good. And every single point of that step has a manual intervention process. And if something doesn't sniff right, well, then you can basically stop the whole process. Okay? So that's the first component. Now I'm going to close that. And the second side of things is I want to discuss a little bit around, actually, you know what? I'm going to go back to configure paths for a second. I'm going to show you something here. So you see we have a dev environment, a QA environment, and a production environment. If I double click on one of these, you can see here, for example, that you can link Azure servers and things. So basically what happens is, and I'll show you this in a second, is I have this Azure server that I've actually set up, for example, as part of my process. And basically what happens at this point is this is basically, you know, available to me to make use of as I need to. And I go from there. Now, I also have the various different sort of servers that are available here as well. And you see, these are all the various different servers that are available to me. So these are Azure virtual machines tied to my account. And the way I sort of set up my account is if I go to the administration side, you can see here, for example, Manage Azure. So if I click on Manage Azure, you can see that I can create a new subscription. So if I had a subscription that I pay by credit card, or if I have what's called an enterprise agreement subscription, I could do that. Or say, for example, I was assigned another MSDN account, then I can actually add that. But as you can see right here, I have my MSDN account associated with this. I provide my subscription ID and the management certificate key, which you can get from the Azure portal. And you provide a storage account name for your release management side of things. And from there, basically, you're good to go. Now, the other component is managing the TFS side. And again, as I said before, you can use Visual Studio Online with release management as well. You don't need TFS on-premises to run this. And as you can see right here, I have my Visual Studio Online account sort of set up here. So if I double-click on this, okay, I guess it's just not letting me show it. But basically what happens here is this is a URL. I provide my credentials for it, and I'm good to go at that point. So at this point, everything that I need from a release management standpoint is connected to Visual Studio Online. So I don't need the release management server. This instance, I can make use and deploy to on-premises using Visual Studio Online, or I can go to the cloud if I want to.
See, and to me, that's the beauty of how all of this stuff all comes together. It's not only did you just, like, I was going to say WYSIWYG, but visually go through all of that configuration.
Yeah.
But it actually removes the complexity, especially because you can integrate with Visual Studio Online. It removes the complexity from having additional infrastructure just to manage this.
You got it. You got it, right.
So to me, that is a huge cost savings for sure, but a huge energy savings in terms of maintenance. And yet it introduces yet another parameter into the mix that may or may not actually work.
Agreed.
So at least you know going through Visual Studio Online and all that kind of stuff is that you have it in such a way where, at least from an infrastructure perspective, someone else is making sure that everything is up and running and works properly.
Exactly. Yep, I totally agree.
So that in and of itself has merit, if nothing else.
Yep, for sure. So with that being said, let's actually go to take a look at how I've sort of set up the apps. Now, again, just to remind you, if it's not completely clear, what I'm trying to do with this is I'm trying to take from Visual Studio Online an ASP.NET MVC project, so a web project, and I want to deploy that project to Azure websites, a dev environment website, a QA environment website, and a production environment website. Now, if you're familiar with Azure websites, you might be asking me, well, why not just have a single website and use what's called deployment slots, right? And yes, you can do that, but I, again, wanted this to be completely explicit as to saying, okay, well, I'm going to deploy to this site and this site and this site. But depending on how you've sort of set things up, deployment slots, which is basically versions of your website, if you will, under a single sort of website service, you could do that as well. And but again, I chose to do it a little bit more explicitly because it's easier to demo that way.
Well, and also, so yes, easier demo for sure, but most likely for doing the types of deployments that you guys are going to be doing, you're going to need to be that explicit and say, I need to know that it's going to this server. slots are deployment slots are great when you're truly in that PaaS model and you don't really care about all of those things. You don't care about where all this goes. But a lot of times, especially if you're already going so far as to use this suite of tools and whatever, chances are you need your deployments, at least if nothing else, procedurally.
Yep.
Or policy-wise or whatever, to be that prescriptive.
Exactly.
So, yes, the functionality is there to use the deployment slots. I'm going to assume, and obviously you all tell me if I'm wrong, but for the types of deployments that you guys are working on, you need server A, server B, server C.
Yep. Yeah, exactly, right. So in this case, what we're doing is I'm being very explicit, like you mentioned, the server A, server B, server C, except it's PaaS instead of server.
Right.
And basically I'm going to use it. Yeah, server, yeah. So I'm going to basically deploy to each of those, and hopefully there's some time to show that
cool.
as well. But the intent here is now I want to show you what this looks like from a deployment standpoint, the actual process. And this is an extremely simple example. So there's not a lot of bells and whistles to the workflow, although certainly you can add whatever you want. And as you can see right here, this is basically my dev, my QA, and my production sort of setup for this. So that's all well and good. Let's take a look at what this looks like. So you can see here, for example, and I'll get this a little bit larger so that everybody can see it. So basically what's happening is all I'm doing is I've created what's called a component. And if you're familiar with release management, you're probably familiar with components. And basically this is a component that is going to use a PowerShell script. So I basically wrapped a PowerShell script around with a component, if you will. So basically what's happening is the PowerShell script or the component is basically going to say, okay, well, the PowerShell script that I need to execute is on this machine, so my dev machine at this point. So this is a virtual machine, which could be on-premises or in the cloud. I happen to have it in Azure. The username and password for that machine that you're going to be using to execute the script. The component name, so this would be the name of the component that you've actually created for this. And the script itself. So you can see there's a publish dev.ps1. I'll show you what that looks like. It's actually quite simple. The final thing that you need is just here, for example, the skip the CA check is true. It's just because it's not really needed in this case and could cause complications otherwise. Donovan, in his blog post, really talks a little bit more about that, so I'll leave that to you to take a look at that. If there were some configuration variables that you needed to, you could actually add some as well. But that's really it. That's basically all it is, and it's true of QA and production as well. The only difference is if you see here, we have the publish dev PS1. Now I also have a QA environment, and if I take a look at this, I have a publish QA PS1. And these are all part of my my ASP.NET MVC website project, which I'm going to go to now just to show you what it looks like. So I'm in Visual Studio, for example, and this is the ASP.NET MVC website, and I've created basically a folder within my ASP.NET MVC website. After I've created it, I just created a folder called configuration, and I added these three different sort of PowerShell scripts. Now, these PowerShell scripts are just text files that I created myself as well, and I use the extension of PS1. So I'm going to show you what one of these things looks like, and they're basically the same across. So I'll make this a little bit smaller so that we can see a little bit more of this. But basically what it is you can see right here, it's basically I'm using PowerShell, Azure extensions for PowerShell. I can't remember the exact official title for it, but basically what I'm doing is I'm using the Azure commands within PowerShell to actually do the deployment. So this PowerShell script is the component that will actually do, or the part of this, the magic within release management that will actually deploy this to dev or to QA. So you can see here, for example, the name of the website that I'm actually deploying this to is PJL PaaS Deploy Web App Dev. So the QA one would be PJL PaaS Deploy Web App QA, or whatever it is that you name that website. And then the prod is prod, for example. And the package that I'm using is basically the package that I got from the drop folder from the build process that release management copied to the virtual machine that I created. And basically what it's doing is saying within that zip folder, there's also another zip file called PJL PaaS Web Deploy, which is my actual project files. That is basically what I'm going to deploy to Azure. And that's the long and short of it. That's actually the very, very easy sort of explanation of it. And like I said, Donovan goes through this step by step in his blog post as well, so you can sort of get a better feel for it. So now, let's actually take a look at this, and I'm going to do a release, and hopefully this will work. So here we go. Just wait for us to show up. Now, what I want to do is I'm going to go to releases here. So again, it's a little tough to see. I apologize for that, but it's just basically the hyperlink to the releases side of things. And as you can see here, what I want to do is I want to do a new vNext release. Okay, so I'm going to click on the new vNext release button, and this is what shows up. So you see here that we have to give it a name, and the default name that it gives is basically the date and time of the release. We'll just leave it like that. That's fine. And the categorization is basically the release template is this one. I only have one release template in this example, so that's the one we're going to use. And the target stage here. And again, this is nothing new to what you see already. So the target stage in this case is prod. But there's three different environments that I have. So if I was to click on this drop list box, and unfortunately I can't when I'm zoomed in, but just believe me, there'd be three different sort of options. There's dev, QA, and prod. And basically what that means is that if you choose something other than prod, which happens to be the last stage within my release path, is basically if I chose QA, basically what this release will do is say, I'm going to go to dev and I'm only going to go to QA and then I'm going to stop. So I'm not even going to touch prod. Or if I choose dev, I'm only going to go to dev and I'm not going to even go to QA or to prod. So you have some flexibility there. That's not specific to this example. That's within release management, but that is something that a lot of people don't realize. And finally, the build. So you can basically decide which build you want to use. You can click on the latest, which is the one that I'm going to use. Or you can select. And if I clicked on select, it'll basically pull TFS or Visual Studio Online, whatever you're connected to. And at that point, basically what it'll do is find out all the various different builds and you can select from a drop list. So that's basically it. So it found the latest build, which is build 34. And now we're going to let this start. Okay, so now that we've started this, we'll just let this go for a little bit. It takes a little while for everything to start kicking off.
And so it's actually important to note in this case that by taking a little bit, it's taking a little bit is what it seems to us. But really, if you look at, or if you think about it, exactly what it's doing in the background,
yeah,
like it's prepping a lot of stuff. It's doing a lot of stuff. So taking a little bit of time is relatively a lot less than what it would be to do it manually.
Exactly.
And actually, if we're looking at the screen right now, yeah, you can actually see how everything is, you know, proceeding on through the workflow.
Exactly. So if you take a look at this, and I'll zoom in a little bit. And so basically the first component is accept development, or deployment, I should say. Now, if you remember from my workflow, I basically said that I wanted that to be passed through for dev. So basically it's just saying, okay, yeah, I did it, and it's automated. Okay, that's fine. The pre-deploy is basically setting up the process within release management to set things up. And then the third component here is basically the deployment. So we're deploying to dev at this point. So let's take a look at the details. Now, hold on a second here. It's just got the spinning wheel here. If I click on the details, you'll see here, for example, I'll make this a little bit larger here so we can see. So basically, the first side is the upload components. And this is basically the process by which we're saying, okay, release management, I want you to take the bits that were put into the drop folder, and I want you to copy those to the virtual machine that is that we've defined for this to sort of stage the deployment afterwards. So as you can see, it succeeded. And now the next part of it is basically doing the components. So deploy using PSDSC. So this is the PowerShell script that I actually had within my project for my ASP.NET MVC project. And it's basically going to use that deploy dev.ps1 or whatever I called it. I can't remember off the top of my head. And it'll at that point go and actually show you, do the deployment. So we'll just let this go because it does take a little bit of time for this to actually happen. So we'll let this go here. So I don't know if anybody has any questions online.
Not as of yet, no. Nope.
Okay. So this, hopefully you're starting to get a sense of, you know, how this allows you to have a repeatable process. So the intent being, you know, like instead of me having to deploy whatever it is that I'm trying to deploy to, maybe instead I can just, you know, use this to do a repeatable process. And it makes it a whole lot easier. And the example that I have here is a very simple website.
Right. Right?
So there's very, very little sort of customization.
You don't have multiple components. No. You don't have different things that need to talk to each other.
Exactly. But it's very easy to add those components in if that was required for your application. So a database.
Right.
If you needed to deploy a database, that could be a separate sort of work item in this. So after you've actually done the deployment, you can go from there. And there you go. So it has succeeded. So that's great. So
nice.
Now we see here, we have, I have to exit this. And now it's going to ask for accepting deployment. And if you remember correctly, this is also automated within QA. So we'll let this go, and hopefully this will work fine. And now it's gone through the pre-deploy within QA, and now it's doing the deployment. So let's see how this works. So now it's uploading the components. So again, within QA, it's doing the same thing that it did in dev. Yep. So at this point, basically, it's grabbing the bits from the
Can we make it bigger so we can actually see?
Yeah, I suppose I can do it this way. There we go. Yeah, thanks. So you have that. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to zoom out if I actually want to see
certain
things happen and things like that. But the intent here is that everything is basically similar. Well, okay, I take that back. It doesn't necessarily have to be similar. You can create wildly different sort of workflows depending on environment if that's what you need. But the intent here is that it's automated, and you can basically automate the components.
And if nothing else, at least the execution of those wildly different environments is still the same.
Yes, exactly, right?
So ultimately, you're still executing workflow. What I really appreciate and I like about this, especially as being the one that would monitor deployments, is that it's not a, I'm just going to send it out there and hope for the best, right? You're actually getting live data back in terms of where it's at, if things are going, what it's doing next, which, let's be honest, at the end of the day is vitally important to ensuring that this stuff gets done.
Yep.
Right? So that's also another thing, too, that why I love using tools like this as much as we do. You mentioned earlier, full traceability.
Yes.
Except most people, when you say full traceability, they think, well, okay, at the end of all of this, I have a report and I have a log.
Yeah.
Okay. But there's a lot more to full traceability than just that. And this is an example of that, where literally as you're going through the process, you can see how things are progressing.
Absolutely.
Right? So yeah, you get the final log in the end, but you're also watching this happen live. In case something goes wrong, you don't find out, X many hours later when you have a log that you need to review all the entries for.
Exactly. Right. So this is still going, so we'll let this continue. So it takes a little bit of time. But you're absolutely right, right? The intent is that you have full visibility into the process, right? And in fact, with the future version, so like with Release Management 2015 coming out later this summer, we're going to provide even more capabilities around visibility.
Nice. And
information is important, right? And getting the information as timely, as sort of you said, as timely as possible is important. So the great thing is about this is it's all connected into TFS, which means that, you can set up alerts within TFS or Visual Studio Online, if you will. I use them interchangeably. If something does go wrong, you can basically get that information. And in fact, with Visual Studio Online and TFS 2015, we've actually added a new API structure so that you can get information from those in a restful way.
Solutions.
Yeah, so that if you wanted something that wasn't available, you could actually get that as well, which is something that's very, very, exciting in a lot of ways. And there we go.
Versus having to go and read it directly from the database.
That's right.
Which, I think we've had this conversation in a previous episode. There are merits to reading directly from a database, but stick to the APIs in all possible cases.
Exactly. So here we have, for example, now it's succeeded. Okay, so in
Good.
QA. So now let's take a look and find out what's happened. Now, so if you remember from the workflow, there was one final step within QA that basically said that, okay, you have to approve the release. And I basically have an approver set up for that.
Yep.
That happens to be me. So at this point, as you can see, it's not automated. So what I need to do now is
pausing before you do that. Check it out. So here, you zoomed in.
Yep.
Here's what I love, okay? You have a setup, you set a step, approve release. You said it's not automated.
Yep.
And look, the entire thing, so the workflow is still in progress.
Yes.
But it's pending your approval.
Exactly, right? So it's paused, right? It's taking a breather.
Well, but that's the beauty of it, is that technically the workflow is still running.
Yep. Exactly, yeah.
Right? So it's prompting you, hey, you didn't automate the step. And that's actually what I was saying earlier when we got all of this started, is that this entire process does not have to be automated.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Just because you're putting your deployment into an automation tool does not mean the entire thing is automated. So now that this is sitting there, technically, from a workflow perspective, still running, but it's waiting for me to do some action, get the best of both worlds. You have a mix of something that's automated, and it's been automated until this time, until when it no longer is needed to be automated.
Exactly. So let's take a look at the approval request, and there you go. See, it's right here. Make it a little bit bigger so we can see it. So you can see there, so it's asking me to take a look at this, it's pending. And once I highlight it, which I'll have to zoom out again, basically these two different set of buttons will be shown because they're grayed out right now. And then I'm going to approve it. So let's actually do that. So click on this. Ah, approve. So let's go. So we'll wait for this to go. And do I want to provide comments? And I could say, for example, not comment.
Looks. What is my comment? Yeah. Comment.
Looks good. Go to prod.
Now, keep this in mind too. In a situation like this, let's say you have corporate policies that say, you know, the sign off needs to be written in a certain way or whatever. So yeah, it's prompting you for a comment, but that's your opportunity to actually customize it again from a procedure perspective to say, hey, in my organization, it has to be like manager's initials, time. Granted, it's gonna put the timestamp on it anyway.
Yep.
But if you need to put something like I hereby certify or whatever, I know different companies have their own way of acknowledging deployments and whatnot.
Yep.
So it actually gives you that opportunity to go in there and say, this is the lingo that I need from a corporate policy perspective.
Yep.
And then in your trace logs and your report afterwards and whatever, that same comment will show up in there.
Exactly. So now the next step, sorry to cut you off.
But you didn't.
So the other component here is now we're in the production workflow. And if you remember in the production workflow, I basically did not have any of those checkboxes checked for automation.
Right.
So everything is going to have a stop at some point, or a pause, I should say. Stop means totally different things. And so in fact, if I wanted to, for example, there was maybe the deployment's going well, but maybe we forgot something or something like that. And we need to stop.
That's never happened.
Never. Well, you can do that. You can click on the stop and then you can go from there, right? But now that we've actually entered into the process of starting the deployment to prod, I have a new approval that showed up. So now it's saying, okay, do I approve the process to get started in prod? So I'm going to approve it, and I'm going to do something that probably is not appropriate, but you could do it if you want, is not add a comment, right? Now, the other thing
is... After the spiel I just gave, you're not going to add a comment.
Well, I just want to show the flexibility, right? But it is under your name, so therefore, if you don't do that, then, you know...
Traceability.
Exactly, right. So now the other thing that's interesting here is that this is the final deployment stage, so now we're basically going to say, do you want to deploy it now or later? And if I click later, it'll basically say, okay, we're going to kick it off at 1 in the morning, for example, or something like that. We're going to kick it off now, because I don't think any of us feel like waiting.
Not particularly.
No. So now we've done that.
Is only so long.
Yes, in fact, we have, 5 minutes?
Something like that.
Okay, hopefully we'll be done in 5 minutes.
The cool thing is, now I don't know if you're going to show it, but at this point in time, so remember, if from now on all of your steps are not automated, effectively this automated workflow just becomes a glorified checklist with full traceability and stuff like that too. So
exactly.
It's this is the part I love the most, actually.
Yep. So as you can see right here, now the same sort of workflow within prod is starting because we've accepted the process and we said, let's go. So now it's doing the upload components, again, getting those same bits from the build folder that we got for dev and we got for QA. And now we're actually deploying it or copying it over to the virtual machine that's going to set off the publication script and go from there. So let's just wait for this to go.
Now, so far, though, you have those steps as automated steps.
Well, no, this is just a step.
Right.
So, I mean, if you wanted to add an automated component to this, you could do that if you want to. And that succeeded. Now it's actually going to kick off the production, deploy to the website, the Azure website. And we'll wait for this to go. And then once that's done, it's done. And all we have to do at that point is we'll take a look at the approval requests because we have to approve the final release of it. Because then if you don't, well, then maybe you have a rollback structure. And that's something I didn't include as part of this process, but you can see that it's going forward. So
especially when you're deploying into an Azure environment, this is the point in time, especially with those Power Scripts and stuff like that. Remember, Azure has a full PowerPoint SDK. So you can do anything and everything in Azure through PowerPoint.
I was wondering where this was going. I just felt like, okay.
PowerShell.
PowerShell, okay. I wasn't sure.
Did I say PowerPoint before?
You did say PowerPoint before.
PowerPoint. But anyway, point being.
Deploy from PowerPoint. Continue.
With PowerShell, you can. Okay. My point was that.
Nice save. Yeah.
With the fact that Azure is fully PowerShell enabled.
Yes.
Effectively, you can build infrastructures, you can build all of this crazy things, you can configure, you can do all of that through your PowerShell script. So there really isn't anything that I can think of, and maybe you can, but there isn't anything really that I can think of that you would need to configure in your environment or build or whatever that you can't script and then input as a step in your deployment.
That is true.
Right? You can even set up virtual networks and stuff like that through PowerShell scripts also.
That's a beautiful thing about it. And we talked about this in previous episodes with release management and deployment as well. What we did here was basically we plugged in existing scripts.
Right.
Right? So the intent behind release management is it doesn't necessarily replace what you currently have.
Right.
And it doesn't even have to be
Unless you wanted to. Maybe
you'll get a better understanding when I finish what I'm saying here. So,
ooh.
Yeah. I'm just joking.
I'm going to turn this.
So the intent here is that you can use what's built out of the box within release management to help you.
Right.
But there are assets that you already have as part of your deployment process today to help you with things. So this could be PowerShell scripts. Maybe there's shell scripts on Unix, for example, or something like that.
Batch files,
you know, executable programs.
Do people still do batch files?
Absolutely, they do. So once all that is sort of set up, all you have to do is componentize those things and then let release management work it. So basically, release management doesn't replace the work that you've done. Yeah. It's complementary to it because you're basically, the real beauty of release management in a lot of ways is it's an orchestrator.
Yeah.
It basically allows you to automate things and to have those checks and balances as part of your release process in using the scripts that you already have today. Now, if you don't like those scripts, there's nothing saying that you can't turf them and try something new. But the bottom line here is that whatever it is that you need or want to do, you can certainly do.
Or have developed over the last 10 years and know that it works, you know, especially for the older applications.
Yep. So this is still going. So hopefully it won't be too much longer. So we'll just let that go. But I love the solution, right? I mean, again, and the whole idea behind, and when we're talking about PowerShell, that's fairly Windows-centric at this point.
Well, you were talking about PowerShell. I was talking about PowerPoint, apparently.
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, I still can't believe I did that. We should change it.
So how would you deploy ClipArt? Never mind.
Hey.
Anyway,
that's fine. You know what? It's Friday, Paul.
Oh.
You're allowed.
So something failed here. So this is an example.
What a perfect demo to look at.
Well, yeah, because I kind of half expected this. Okay, and the reason for that.
And maybe you scripted it too.
I didn't script it. So let's take a look at what happened. Now, if you take a look at the log here, for example, this one's fairly simple, right? So
it was
successful. Successfully uploaded to the normalized store. Now let's make this a little bit larger. We word wrapped that, but that's fine. But let's make this a little larger so that everybody can see it. Yeah, let's make it like that. Now, okay, so that's all well and good. Now let's take a look at the log for the one that failed. And you can see here it provides you all the information here. So this is fairly technical.
Full stack trace.
Yeah, right. So you can see, for example, there's something here that didn't quite work out properly. So therefore, you can take a look at this and find out what went wrong, and then you can go from there. So,
and the beauty of it is, though, is that now, so that part failed, but the rest of the workflow is still pending.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not like, unless you wanted it to, and you could technically trigger a full rollback just from that. But as you have it set up right now, it's just sitting there waiting for you to do something.
Exactly, right? So at this point, you know, it's, well, actually, no, that's not entirely true. Because it failed, it actually rejected the deployment. So if you needed to roll back.
But it didn't roll back everything else.
No, but if I had a rollback structure, it would actually help when you do that kind of stuff as
right.
well. So
what I was trying to get at, though, is that the way you've set up the workflow right now,
yes,
it rejected the deployment. But the automation didn't kick in to go and reverse everything.
Agreed.
Because, you know, it may actually just be something silly or a connection or something, a false positive or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So customization is key.
Exactly. So there you go. That's an example. You know, like, hopefully your deployments go end-to-end and they're completely fine. But the intent here is that, you know, you have that full traceability.
Right.
You have the ability to automate and not automate whatever you want. And release management will orchestrate your releases. And in fact, this is a very, very important tool, for example, if you're doing multiple releases on different sort of applications that may have interconnections with each other and things like that. So, you know, like if you're sharing environments with applications for whatever reason.
Well, and that's what I was saying earlier, is that
exactly.
That's when things get complicated, all the more reason why you would want an orchestrator in there to actually
exactly.
factor in all those variables.
You got it.
So last but not least, I'm pretty sure that this is the case, but all of this stuff, like your actual release workflow itself, that also gets checked into Visual Studio, doesn't it?
So as of right now, no. It's a good question, though. So basically, that exists within the release management tool. They're looking into how that's going to work going forward. In fact, they've sort of figured out a lot of that stuff.
Cool.
And there'll be disclosure about how everything sort of works when we release the service and all that kind of stuff as well.
Okay. Yeah.
So hopefully this was interesting and useful. Like I said, we'll provide the link to Donovan's blog post because I think you can, if you're interested, you can go through this step by step if you want as well. And hopefully this will help with your Azure deployments to PaaS rather than just infrastructure.
Drops the mic, leaves. It's all about PaaS, man. That's what it is.
I love PaaS.
You know what? Yes. Infrastructure as a service is easy these days. So it's like, yeah, it's there. I don't want to say it's not worth talking about, but I don't know. This whole concept of PaaS always gets me excited,
yep.
Especially when we do something like this where we bring what technically is considered new school.
Yes.
With your more traditional deployment and deployment orchestration and stuff like that.
For sure.
So the beauty of it is I think what we're getting at is you have the options, right? So if you walk away with nothing else from this episode, is you have options. Release management can go either way, and you can customize it based on your corporate policies and the way that you run things, so that it's not effectively there to dictate to you what to do.
Exactly.
Which I think is always like, at least a lot of the commentary that I've gotten from customers in the past is that it's like, once you start bringing a tool like this in, it's like, oh, that's it. The tool tells us how to do it.
Yeah.
Like this, and we got to change our entire way of doing things just because the tool says so.
You got it.
So as you can clearly see, not the case.
Yes.
So that's it for us for today. So we went through a nice chunk from start to finish. As always, if you have any questions, by all means, please either comment back on the video, let Paul and I know either on Twitter, Jay Rosenblatt, P. LaBerge. Feel free to email us. Don't use the email address that Paul had in his screenshots there.
That's a personal email address, but please.
You can use paul.laberge@microsoft.com.
Absolutely.
And Paul and the team are always there and ready to help if you have any specific questions or, hey, you want to figure out, hey, how do I actually do this in my environment and whatnot. That's it for now. Obviously, we actually got confirmed for another season of Breakpoint.
Woo!
Super excited about that.
Thank you
all for continuing to watch this lovely show of ours. We'll be back. But if you have episode topics and stuff like that and ideas that you want to share with us, please
either
send them to us directly or tweet back at us. Make sure you use the Breakpoint CA hashtag so that we know and we see your messages. Tweet it at CDNDevs is the hashtag the handle that we use. Or if you're the Facebook variety, then post it on the Microsoft Developer Canada Facebook wall and we'll get it from there.
Sounds good.
Other than that, stay tuned to any one of those social channels. We'll let you know when the video is available on demand. We'll give you all the information for the next episode when we have it ready for you.
Absolutely.
All right. In that case, have yourself a wonderful weekend.
Yes.
Enjoy the weather. It's certainly starting to turn out to be way nicer than it was in the winter months.
We're getting
there.
We are getting there, for sure.
At some point, summer will come.
Yes.
All right. Have a good one.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks again. Have a great day.